Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, January 31st, 2024. The spokesperson of the United Nations mission in Abyei says the situation in the area remains tense.
There were four incidents in four different places within Abyei. There was an attack in Agok by unknown gunmen targeting the company operating base of UNISPA.
And Transparency International ranks South Sudan amongst the most corrupt countries in Africa.
The analysis has revealed that a global trend of weakening justice systems is reducing accountability for public officials, which has allowed corruption to thrive.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei says it has transported the bodies of two peacekeepers who were killed over the weekend to Ghana and Pakistan. UN Secretary General condemns the violence and the attacks against the UNISFA and calls on the governments of South Sudan and Sudan to swiftly investigate the attacks with the assistance of UNISFA and bring the perpetrators to justice. UNISFA spokesperson Antoinette Midday says the situation in Abyei remains tense following the weekend attacks.
In the aftermath of the attack in Abyei, the situation remains tense. However, fighting has subsided and we've not had new attacks since this morning. The situation has been quiet. There were four incidences in four different places within Abyei. There was an attack in Agok by unknown gunmen targeting the company operating base of UNISPA. And the company operating base returned fire during the attack and were able to repel the attackers. However, unfortunately, a Ghanaian soldier was shot in the chest during the attack and he died. On 27th, again the same day, intercommunal clash took place at an IDP site within a Abyei town that is called Minkwach. This followed an alleged misunderstanding between two groups within the market. And that attack also led to deaths and casualties among civilians. The same day, an intercommunal clash took place in an area called Majbong, and four people were reportedly killed. And then the next day, on the 28th, a quick reaction force of the Pakistani peacekeepers, which had three vehicles and 14 individuals, was escorting two civilian patients from a market called Amiet to a local hospital in Abyei. And the convoy was attacked by armed people within Abyei town. One peacekeeper from the Pakistani contingent died and four others were injured in the attack, as well as a civilian who suffered gunshot wounds. As of now, the bodies of the two peacekeepers have been transported out of Abyei to Entebbe and onwards to their respective countries, that is Ghana and Pakistan.
This sounds like a difficult situation over there. Talk to us about the mandate of UNISFA. It's my understanding that this mission is operating under Chapter 7, and these attacks are frequently occurring in Abyei. How prepared are peacekeepers on the ground to deter any danger to lives of civilians in Abyei?
I would just say that during the attacks, first of all, to address the attacks, during the attacks, our peacekeepers were able to repel the attack on Agok. For example, I mentioned the Agok attack where one of our peacekeepers passed away, died. During that attack, we were able to repel the attackers, and that definitely saved a lot of lives. And outside the Agok COB, that's the company operating base, there is an IDP camp that is hosting quite a number of IDPs. Had that not happened, then the casualty rate would have been very high. During the attack in Abyei town also, our peacekeepers were able to fight back, and that minimized the number of casualties. But I just want to also say that UNIFA is implementing its mandate and is securing the area of operation. Over the last few months, we have intensified our patrols. We are doing joint patrols, especially in the southern part of Abyei, where we have experienced various incidences of communal violence. We are undertaking day and night patrols. We have the Pakistanis, the Ghanaians, and the Indian battalions joining hands and conducting these broad foot patrols, air patrols, and just securing the area in the southern part of Abyei, where we've experienced an upset of fighting in the last few months. So we definitely have a mandate to implement, and we continue to do so.
You are executing your mandate in the backdrop of a situation where the Abyei administrative area and other civil society are saying that UNISFA is not living up to its call. How do you react to that?
At the moment, I would say that we are supporting efforts to de-escalate tensions, which have been witnessed over the last few days. And there have been intensified efforts to collaborate with both local, national, and international actors to collectively seek solutions at all levels to resolve the conflict. And of course, keeping an eye on finding a lasting solution on the Abyei issue. So we are continuing to, on the ground, we have intensified our protection measures, and we are also undertaking these engagements with at different levels, as I mentioned, at local level, at national level, and international level. We recently had a meeting and a visit by the nine of Dinka chiefdoms, who had a meeting with us on how we can enhance our protection measures. We've had a meeting with the civil society within the Abyei area. We've also had a meeting with the chief administrator and his cabinet 2 days ago. So we continue to engage to seek collaborative solutions to, and this is, of course, at all levels, the government of South Sudan, with the UN headquarters, with the special envoy's office. All those engagements are going on and are very intensified to ensure that security returns to Abyei.
That's Antoinette Midday, UNISFA's spokesperson. She spoke with me from Abyei town earlier on Tuesday. Israel calls for disbanding UNRWA, the United Nations agency that helps Palestinians, after Israeli presented evidence that at least 12 staffers of the UN participated in the October 7th massacre. Several major donors have suspended funding. Palestinians say the UN agency fills a vital role in distributing humanitarian aid in Gaza. Linda Gratstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
The U.S. Congress is holding hearings this week into whether the United States should permanently defund UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, in charge of supporting the 1.5 million Palestinians defined as refugees in Gaza. Some major donors, including the United States, have suspended UNRWA's funding in response to recent Israeli revelations that UNRWA staff actively participated in the October 7th Hamas massacre in Israel that killed roughly 1,200 people. Israel has presented evidence of acts committed by at least 12 UNRWA staffers, including kidnapping an Israeli woman and participating in a massacre on a kibbutz. In addition, about 10% of UNRWA's Gaza employees have links to Islamist groups, and 50% have close relatives who belong to those groups, according to UN Watch, the watchdog group bringing evidence to the Congressional Committee. Hillel Nehrer is the executive director of UN Watch.
UN Watch is releasing a new report entitled UNRWA's Terrorgram, where we expose a Telegram chat group of 3,000 UNRWA teachers in Gaza. The purpose of the group is to exchange information for UNRWA teachers, but interspersed among 249,000 messages that we downloaded before they would be deleted, they repeatedly celebrate terrorism, on October 7th and thereafter.
UNRWA has a staff of 13,000 in Gaza, most of them teachers in UNRWA schools. In response to the Israeli allegations, the agency says it has fired 9 people and will continue to investigate. But some Israeli analysts say the problem with UNRWA goes far beyond today's crisis. They say that UNRWA has perpetuated the status of Palestinians as refugees for political reasons rather than resettling them like refugees from other conflicts. Einat Wilf is a former Israeli Knesset member and has co-written a book about UNRWA.
UNRWA is started as a temporary agency with good intentions to settle the Arab refugees from the war of 47, 48, 49. Tens of millions of refugees were settled at the time from post-imperial wars. None of them, nor their hundreds of millions of descendants, are called refugees today. They've moved on to build new lives. Except the Palestinians.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the Israeli evidence against UNRWA is, quote, highly, highly credible, but also said that UNRWA plays a crucial role in distributing needed aid in Gaza. Palestinian officials say defunding UNRWA will be collective punishment and make the difficult humanitarian situation during the war in Gaza even worse. Nabil Abu Rudena is a spokesman for the Palestinian Authority.
This step simultaneously taken during the war in Gaza sends a wrong message. There is a war against the Palestinian people. This decision is incorrect and should be stopped immediately. We urge all these countries to repay the UNRWA because it's a humanitarian issue.
Palestinians fear that if UNRWA is unable to operate in Gaza, the more than 1 million people sheltering in UNRWA schools will suffer an even greater humanitarian crisis. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Global anti-corruption organization Transparency International released its annual Corruption Perception Index yesterday. It says efforts to curb corruption in Africa in 2023 stagnated, with 44 out of 49 countries assessed getting scores reflecting high levels of corruption. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
The Corruption Perceptions Index, or the CPI, ranks countries by their perceived levels of public sector corruption. It scores on a scale of 0, which is highly corrupt, to 100, which is very clean. According to the index, the least corrupt countries in the world in 2023 were Denmark, Finland, and New Zealand, with scores between 85 and 90. In Africa, says Transparency International, or TI, only a few countries, most notably Seychelles, Cabo Verde, and Botswana, have minimal government-led corruption. The president of TI Zambia, Priscilla Chansa, presented the CPI in Lusaka yesterday. She said Africa's average score was just 33, meaning it has some of the worst official corruption in the world.
The analysis has revealed that a global trend of weakening justice systems is reducing accountability for public officials, which has allowed corruption to thrive. We have also established that corruption and the rule of law are closely intertwined. When justice can be bought or be politically interfered with, the laws stop applying equally to all, and saving private interests rather than the common good becomes the norm.
According to TI, Equatorial Guinea, South Sudan, and Somalia are the most corrupt countries in Africa. But it says officials are also plundering billions of dollars in more developed economies, including Kenya, Nigeria, Ghana, and South Africa. Chansa said South Africa in particular showed remarkable increases in corruption, despite President Cyril Ramaphosa's pledge 5 years ago to clean up the governing African National Congress. Transparency International says the era of state capture, during which former President Jacob Zuma and allies allegedly stole about 500 billion rands, that's $30 billion, continues to weigh on South Africa, with little being done to prosecute some of the biggest financial crimes ever perpetrated in Africa. Johannesburg-based anti-corruption activist Wayne Divinage says he's not surprised by South Africa's bad rating.
The fact is that we're going backwards, and that's a real concern, especially on the fact that, you know, Cyril Ramaphosa came into office on the back of an anti-corruption ticket and stance. When we see what's happening since state capture, by the way, since Ramaphosa has come into power, the absolute abuse of the procurement systems is diabolical. It is atrocious what is going on and how much money is being wasted. People not being held accountable when the evidence is so very clear. So there's a political interference issue. There's a lack of political will.
Ramaphosa's office told VOA the president acknowledges corruption is one of the major failings of the ANC-led government, resulting in development stalling and state institutions faltering. Ramaphosa's spokesperson said the president's National Anti-Corruption Advisory Council is helping him towards implementation of policy and institutional reforms that will soon result in what he calls an erosion of corruption in government. Meanwhile, says the CPI, South Africa is just one of many African countries where corrupt officials are siphoning resources away from basic public services, depriving millions of Africans of access to health and education. Chansa says the index also has some good news.
In 2023, a record 5 countries in sub-Saharan Africa have achieved their highest ever CPI scores. This includes Seychelles, the top performer on the continent. Our neighbor Tanzania, another neighboring country, Angola, retains the record for the best 5-year improvement in the CPI score globally, jumping up 14 points since 2018.
Chansa says these countries and others, like Zambia and Ivory Coast, have implemented effective mechanisms against graft. These include well-resourced anti-corruption authorities and economic and financial crime sections in the court system. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development ranks Africa as the region with the lowest amount of e-commerce investment. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
I look forward to hearing some of your proverbs from your villages. And our proverb of today is from Kenya.
Hi, my name is Maimuna Hassan. I'm from the coastal province of Kenya. And my proverb for you today in Swahili is Usipoziba ufa, utajenga ukuta, which literally means if you do not repair a crack on the wall, you will end up rebuilding an entire wall. The moral of that proverb is you have to learn when things happen, when you get like an accident or you get into problems, you have to learn and fix them very early on instead of waiting for them to expound and become bigger before you try and fix or find a solution to your problems.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The United Nations Conference on Trade and Development ranks Africa as the region with the lowest amount of e-commerce investment. UNCTAD says e-commerce is currently accessible to very few urban areas, particularly because of lack of an effective address system and a small percentage of the population having access to bank accounts. An AI solution, however, aims to broaden the market by connecting small-scale businesses to more people. Senawu Todd reports from Accra, Ghana.
Doman Foods is a Ghanaian catering business inspired by a traditional delicacy called the Beaufords. By garnishing these homemade donuts with customized toppings, they say they help people celebrate life and love.
We want to help people celebrate birthdays, special occasions, anniversaries, I miss you days, I love you days, any day, any of life's moments that you want to celebrate.
After 8 years of operation, Doman Foods has more than 100,000 clients across the Ghanaian capital, most of whom depend on delivery services to surprise their loved ones. But most of its customers lack formal street addresses, a common problem across the African continent. Some also lack bank accounts, which complicates payments. Kofiga says these problems used to hamper his business, especially during occasions such as Valentine's Day in 2017.
And we only had two phones, and we had to serve, say, a customer base of about 200 orders. And here's different people sending you text messages, people calling, and they were all calling to place their orders on Valentine's Day, on just a single day, right? And so we're able to process some orders. We missed out some details of setting all some orders. It was very hectic.
Since then, Kofiga has started using an artificial intelligence tool called Chatbot Africa from Accra-based company M-Notify.
The chatbot is able to take the order, is able to remember all the details, and then it's able to also give them the payment link. They confirm they receive the payment, and the chatbot is able to confirm the payment and then tell us that this customer has paid, this customer has not paid, this customer wants to pay cash on delivery. All those details are taken care of, and it's very seamless.
Clients can use this AI tool to place orders and make payment through local payment systems like mobile money and share locations for delivery. The AI in turn translates this into a simple SMS to the business and delivery merchants. Kofiga says business is up 25% thanks to Chatbot Africa. M-Notify CEO Ronald Tego says the tool is easy for small-scale businesses to set up.
So we have the web portal where, without having any IT skills, just go create an account and you connect that to a phone number which is connected on WhatsApp or to your Instagram page or your Facebook page, and upload your products. Then once you are done, it's the end.
Tego is developing more AI tools to bridge the e-commerce gap, including voice recognition for those who cannot read and write.
So imagine a seller on the market who doesn't read and write. They are still able to sell their tomatoes and vegetables to other customers who also do not read and write, all with the power of voice.
E-commerce experts say the introduction of AI into the market will help improve sales and reduce poverty, particularly for marginalized communities on the continent. Sena Anutod, VOA News, Accra.
From Accra, we move to Nairobi, where a polio vaccination campaign that was planned for November last year but was postponed due to heavy rains and floods. It is finally taking place in three high-risk counties in northeastern part of Kenya. This comes after 13 cases of the so-called circulating vaccine-derived polio virus type 2 were discovered last year in the area. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo reports.
This is the third round of polio vaccination targeting three high-risk counties of Mandera, Wajir, and Garissa. The goal, according to Kenya's Ministry of Health and its partners, is to reach about 750,000 children under the age of 5. About 238,000 children ages 6 to 15 in certain areas will also be vaccinated. Adan Ibrahim, Garissa County Director of Health, explains.
The first case was actually, the sample was collected in June 2023, and this was a child which came from Somalia side, became sick and they went to the health facility. They were investigated because they were symptomatic, and then they were confirmed to have a polio positive.
Ibrahim says soon after, more cases were detected in some of the refugee camps.
In the camps, Hagadera camps, there were 13 confirmed cases of polio in the camps in last year. And that has necessitated actually three rounds of campaign to be conducted. We did two rounds last year. And this one was actually also scheduled to take place in November last year.
But due to heavy rains and floods that killed 130 and displaced 89,000, the November round was postponed. Kenya is not the only country affected by a resurgence of polio. After 3 decades of being polio-free, Burundi had 16 cases last year. And as of August 2023, 187 confirmed cases of circulating variant poliovirus have been reported in 21 countries in the Africa region, according to the World Health Organization. Among the many reasons this has been happening are inaccessibility to basic health care, conflict and insecurity in some other countries, and climate change, says Ibrahim.
Polio is more of a oral, is a oral fecal transmission. And because of this, climate change, age of drought, bring poor sanitation at the end of the day because of the issue of lack of water and all those things.
The Horn of Africa region recently suffered its worst drought in decades. To eradicate the disease, Ibrahim points out that countries need to strengthen routine immunization, invest in a robust surveillance system, and improve their respective healthcare systems. Polio is a highly infectious and debilitating disease that affects children under 5, causing permanent paralysis. It can also cause death in 2 to 10% of those paralyzed, according to WHO. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday, January 31st, 2024. We now leave you with the song Beledi by Mawa. We've been listening to Mawa with the song Beledi. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Bill Bass, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Egypt, Shilu Halai, Uchad, Deru Darfur, Ugongo, Deru Bazi, Uganda, Shilu Arua, Ukenya, Shilu Nadapal, Ubagi Alfa Dulude, Ae Barakesimu, Uyala, Sigu Sudan, Deru Shilu Abiei.